Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Phoenix, Arizona, it's time for Phoenix Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Winning Business Radio, where we connect you to strategies and resources to help you win more RFPs. I am your host, Lisa Rehurick, the number one leading authority on RFP success and passionate about helping small businesses win at business. So I am always excited to introduce our guests because I'm always so excited about people that we've brought on to talk to you about different ways that you can win more at business. Today, we've got a gentleman by the name of Jerry Houston, and Jerry is the founder and CEO of HPI Solutions. It's formerly known as Houston Partners International. And Jerry has held, you're going to love this background of Jerry's because he's held like so many different positions and he's got such a wide array of experience and awards and kudos. So he's held key management positions in the industry for over 30 years. This guy knows his stuff. He's dedicated his career to the development of human potential and process excellence through a variety of certifications. We're going to talk a whole lot about what that means because that's a little fancy jargon there, but there's a whole lot of meat underneath that. And we're going to talk a whole lot about that. He has been a longtime community activist and has served as president of various associations for developmentally disabled individuals, a homeless family program, a church leader, heavy involvement in local and regional chambers of commerce, chair of business advancement services for ASBA, which is the Arizona Small Business Association. And he's also served on multiple task forces and committees in the educational sector. He has been awarded Target Training International's President's Award and was also an adjunct faculty member at Purdue University Calumet. Did I pronounce that right?
Calumet. You're not a Midwesterner.
I am not, right? Okay. Yikes. And there, he concentrated in the area of continuous quality improvement. He's also a member of the Business Mentor Team, which is a local nonprofit that helps mentor different businesses. That's how I know Jerry. We sit on that that group together and help small businesses mentor them into success. Let's see, I got a couple more things here. He has been named to the prestigious National Directory of Who's Who and Executives and Professionals in America. And he was named the Volunteer of the Year in 2009 at the Arizona Small Business Association. Ooh, right? That is a lot of stuff. And let me just tell you a little bit about the company, too, because the company focuses, HPI Solutions itself is a performance improvement company, and they really focus and have an emphasis on developing the human potential in your organization and the processes to support their efforts. And they do this with their threefold approach, focused on professional development, creating a productive workforce, and profitable growth. Mm-hmm. We all need all of those, right? Their goal is to help you maximize the potential of your team as individuals and as a group. And, you know, I thought it would be really great to have Jerry come and join us because when we're dealing with RFPs, we've got a team, right? We've got a team in place of some sort, whether it's an official team or a non-official team. And one of the things that the companies that I work with a lot struggle with is really hiring the right people, managing the right people, motivating the right people, training and development. We lose sight of a whole bunch of those different things. So it relates directly back to RFPs and that those response teams are very important and how we formulate them and motivate them will ultimately alter the success. So that's what we're talking about today, performance management, training and development, hiring, motivating, all of that, which Jerry is a master in. So that's a whole lot of talk, Jerry. Welcome to the show. So happy to have you.
Thank you, Lisa. I'm worn out from all of the things that I must be doing because you read them. And so I'm going to leave now.
Isn't it great when somebody else reads back all of your accomplishments?
Gosh.
That's great. Well, I'm going to kick it off right with a question for you. When we are building a team, how can we truly tell who does and doesn't have potential? I mean, that's kind of a big question, but...
That's a big question. And before I can answer the question, I need to ask a couple of additional questions.
Nice.
Potential's a really interesting word, don't you think?
Yeah.
Are we talking about potential related to skills, to experience, to education, or behaviors?
Hmm.
Or all four of those? What are we talking about when we talk about potential? And is this team that is being formed from one organization or across department or business unit lines, or is this a totally new team and the team members don't know each other? Because that impacts the dynamics, doesn't it?
Yeah, for sure.
It makes a difference. So once we understand the mission of the team and what the end game is, then we can look at those characteristics, the skills, the experience, the education that cause them to be qualified to do what we want them to accomplish. And frankly, I think one of the big reasons for failure on teams is they're ill-conceived.
Right. Starting out, like, because that the way you started that out is that there's some questions that have to be answered before you can really understand if the team is going to have potential. You've got to know a whole lot more about them that I would venture to say a lot of people don't ask.
That's very true. And then they get into trouble because the team can't execute on the plan.
Right. They put the wrong people, probably.
You can put the wrong, you know, the old saying about getting the right people on the bus in the right seats with a driver that knows where he's going.
Yeah.
Right. Makes a big difference.
Yeah, it really does. You said something in there that I want to circle back to is you said something about behaviors. Tell us a little bit more about behaviors and how does that play into the team development process and the team potential process?
So we are who we are. And some of us do well with who we are and others struggle because of the environment they're in. If the environment doesn't match, if the job style or the role in the team doesn't match the profile, the behavioral style of that individual, how do we deal with that? How do we manage it? And we can all adapt our behavior to some extent.
Yes.
But you can't take an extrovert and make them into an introvert.
I know that to be true.
And so think back to school. Sit still, be quiet. For an extrovert, that's a really, really tall order.
Painful if any of my teachers are listening. They're laughing right now.
So behavior really focuses on, we used to say two quadrants, extroversion and introversion. Mm-hmm. We got over that in about 300 BC and figured out that there's four quadrants, right? And four quadrants, of course, we know that of those, there's a dominant style, which is task-focused. There's an influencing style, which is people-focused. There's on the introversion side, there's a steadiness focus. You've heard the term steady Eddie. Well, these are those folks that are calm, that are steady, that are reliable, that are easy to be around. Steadiness. And that's, again, a people focus. So here on the extroversion side, you have people who are people focused. And on the introversion side, you have people that are people focused in different ways. And then finally, the compliance factor, which is introverted also. And that's all about getting permission. I want to be sure I'm doing this exactly the right way. And so those styles, we all register on that scale someplace.
Yeah.
And that combination of those four factors, wherever we register, defines our behavioral style. And it may or may not fit the position, what the position wants in a behavioral style. And we'll talk more about the idea of job benchmarking in a little bit.
Okay.
Because that can even apply to teams.
Right.
But that's the whole idea that we take this style and we are who we are. So we believe that 70% of your natural style you're born with. And we believe the other 30% is a matter of nurturing, of influence from your parents and grandparents and those close to you when you were a young child. But once it's set, you are who you are. Mm-hmm. So I can't turn you into an introvert.
Oh, dang
it. I can't do it, Lisa.
As hard as we may try,
I've seen your
right?
behavioral profile, and I just can't go there, right? So think about that as you think about, you know, how important is this? Since every job has a style, what is the job of this person, and do they line up?
And that potential is defined differently based on the different... what you need in the role and the behavior of the person, right? That's got to match up. And
absolutely. You know. And then it's gifts differing, talking about a team.
Yeah.
So should everybody be the same exact behavioral style? So if everybody were core dominant and they were very quick to anger and quick to challenge, how would that go?
Right. Disastrous.
Or if everybody were core steady and not a real open communication style typically.
Yeah.
How would that go if everybody on the team was core steady? It doesn't follow. So we need the richness of the different styles, but guess what happens? Conflict. Conflict occurs because we're different from each other.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, I wish she would say something. You're right. Thinking, I wish he would shut up. Because we're different in the way that we listen and process and communicate with each other.
Team dynamics. This team dynamics is such an important conversation for us in business in general, right? In RFPs, I feel like, especially a lot of my type of clients, they're small businesses. They're not super small, but they're maybe they've got one person dedicated to proposals, but then they pull in all these other ancillary people who are doing other jobs that are maybe technical experts. And there's not a purpose behind formulating that team for the sole purpose of RFP responses. And it's, you know, everything that you're saying is showcasing how important it is to understand the dynamics on the team, and that not every person is going to be able to fill a role, and you probably don't want everybody to have the same behavioral style, because ouch, that could be
absolutely
painful.
Or if you get two talky folks on there, is that a word? Talky
folks. We talky folks make up words all the time, so now it is.
But we want to be talking,
right?
So we're not as good at listening. And sometimes when you're on an RFP team and you need to gather information, listening's not a bad idea.
Right. Somebody right? on the team better be
somebody
listening.
Somebody better be listening. Right.
I love it. All right. So one of the things that your company focuses on is helping to create a productive workforce. And that's kind of a buzz phrase, right? Productive workforce. What the heck does that mean? But what really makes one person more productive over another? Don't you love my big questions here, Jerry?
My father used to tell me it was fear. Just do what the supervisor tells you. Keep your mouth shut. Get your paycheck, bring it home, give it to your wife. Probably not true.
Probably not.
But productivity is really based on similar factors from the previous question.
Okay.
So if I were to put you in a job, because I know you're extroverted, mm-hmm. you are pretty task-oriented, though.
I am.
And that's
yes.
why you're so superb in the RFP world, because
yep.
there's a lot of tasks connected to that world.
Right.
But what if I were to put you in a job where you were an air traffic controller and you had to follow all the FAA regulations to the letter of the law every day?
No way.
Right. So you would revert under pressure. We revert back to our natural style.
Yeah.
So here you would be saying, hey, come on down. There's a party in lounge 6 in Terminal 2. I'll meet you over there.
So well.
All right.
Yeah.
May not be safe for the flyers, right? For the flying public. So that's an example, though. If I'm not correctly matched, behaviorally speaking, to the work I'm doing, then it drains my energy because I either have to adapt my behavior the best I can.
Right.
I would be a horrible, horrible air traffic controller. People would die.
Right. Same here.
It would be very bad because.
Yep.
I have a little attention problem, bright, shiny problem. And I know that. And it suits me well for the work that I do. It fits yes. right to what I, and that's why I'm so passionate about the work that I do for now almost 27 years.
Oh, that's great.
Because I'm excited about it because it fits who I am.
Yep.
And that's really important. So part of it is that behavioral match. You know, what would the job say if the job could talk?
Ooh, good question.
What would the job say about, this is the kind of human being I want in this job so that I'm comfortable being in this job?
Mm.
And it's hard to think in those terms to get yourself outside of yourself.
Yeah.
But when you can do that skillfully, and that's a part of what we do, is to help companies benchmark positions so they get the right human beings in the right roles. And then their success rate increases in terms of retention.
That's so great. So when you say benchmark, so you're basically talking about, you know, here's a role. Do you help them define the role?
We help them to define the role.
Because I find that a lot of companies don't have a clue, really, about the true definition of the role or what they really need in that role.
Right. Do you love job descriptions as much as I do?
Right. Yes. Sarcasm.
Sarcasm. So think about that, because the company will write a job description. They may not even confer with a person that's in that job to really understand the job from an inside perspective. So they write it. Sometimes they pull it off the internet.
Yes, they copy somebody else. They
copy some other job from some other culture and some other company. And it's wrong. It doesn't match. And when they get into the benchmark, if they brought that job description with them, they very quickly find out that it doesn't match and that what they think that job is about is not what that job is about. Once you're in a benchmark with subject matter experts from their own company who know that work and say, that's not what we do in that job. That's not correct.
Interesting.
And we begin to find out. You know, so we want somebody who has high customer service skills and there's very little customer service contact in the job. Well, is that person with high customer service skills going to be happy in a job that doesn't have any customer contact?
Right.
Example, right?
Yeah.
Example. So that's really important. When they don't connect, then eventually they disengaged. I wish I could, for your listeners, draw, you know, a window for them and show them how people come in, they're not competent yet, they're new.
Right.
But they're really engaged, they're really excited. Things go along for a while and they're more competent, but they're starting to get a little less excited because they don't fit to the work behaviorally. And then they move to being disengaged. They're still a little competent, they're fighting their way through it.
Yep.
And then finally they become completely disengaged and completely incompetent.
Oh, and I'm sure that our listeners are have all experienced that in
Absolutely.
Some way, if not for their team, for themselves, right? Because we've probably all been in a job where that's happened.
Right, and let's not beat them up because I'm guilty. I'm holding my hand up, listeners. I'm guilty right. of making a lot of hiring mistakes in my life until I learned about a more objective way to do it.
Yes. Beautiful, beautiful. Well, that's some really great information right there. And I want to circle back to productivity a little bit. So, you know, we're talking about behavioral styles and we are who we are. Can productivity be taught or is that ingrained in kind of who we are is who we are and we're going to do it the way we do it?
I like to think of it more as engagement. Mm. And so through the benchmarking process, we assume we have a client I like to brag about. They're our poster child for job benchmarking in the country. They're in Tampa, Florida.
Okay.
They're an engineering company. They have been using our system for almost 6 years now.
Okay.
They have not had a single hiring failure, not one.
Ooh, that's beautiful.
And engineers are tough to find and tough to keep.
Yes.
And they are just, they have drank the Kool-Aid.
Nice. Here,
and they really believe in the system and they make it work.
Yeah.
It isn't just our system that's good. It's the use of the system by the client that causes the success because they believe in it. They will not hire someone that doesn't fall in the range of that benchmark.
That's beautiful.
They're just very careful. And the other pieces I mentioned, skills, experience, and education.
Right.
Because if I'm going to be productive, I have to know what I'm doing.
Absolutely.
So the behavioral side, the human side is 25% of that hiring decision.
Mm.
Yep. Skills, do I have the requisite skills and abilities to do the job? How many companies, Lisa, do you suppose still test for skills, hard skills?
Well, you know, other than maybe temp workers, right, where they do like a typing test or a I would say a technical skill, yes, but the non-technical skills that are still really important, like what we're talking about here, people skills and some of that kind of stuff. Nobody tests
they
for that.
They say, we just helped hire an administrative manager for a client. Well, they put on their resume, I know, Excel and PowerPoint and Word and Publisher. And so we test them. And guess what?
They don't know what
Not
they
exactly,
say they know.
Right? Not exactly. Anybody can say 33 million people a year lie on their resumes, give or take.
Wow.
So, yeah, how's that for a statistic? And
that's
so
a big statistic.
That's a big statistic. And because resumes are so misleading that we have to dig in. Do you really have the skills? Do you really have the experience? We just caught another person who falsified transcript documents from the university he never went to.
Because nobody checks those.
Nobody
it's
checks.
It's crazy
nobody
how nobody checks.
So it's rampant, right? So shame on us
shame
as
on
employers
us. Yep.
for not for not checking, not being sure. So productivity comes from engagement. I love what I'm doing. You mentioned Kathy Huska. She'll kill me for bringing her name
Hi,
up on
Kathy.
The radio. But we love Kathy Huska. Yes. Why? She fits her job to the letter. Absolutely yeah. to the letter. And she's so passionate. There isn't anything else shy of riding horses. There isn't anything else Kathy loves more than she loves her job. Why? Because it fits her lifestyle. It fits her skills, experience, education. She gets to be very creative. And as a result of that, she produces results way, way beyond what the average person in that kind of role will produce.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting too, you know, do you ever, have you ever known somebody, I'm sure everybody listening has, and I've known a lot of people is, you know, they're not doing well in their job. They get laid off. They're bitter and pissed and they end up finding another job and they're so much happier because they don't necessarily know themselves well enough to know what the right fit is for them.
Right.
And if they can stumble into it and find that job that is the right matchup to that right alignment, right, to what their behavioral style fits with and their motivators also, right? Because I know that you deal with not just behavioral style, but also what motivates people and what drives them into action. All of those things, when they're aligned, you're going to be so much happier. The company's going to be happy and you're going to be happy. Right. And I think a lot of people just don't know that about themselves.
And I don't want to get too technical for our audience,
yep,
because we folks in a behavioral game, we start to talk like behavioral.
Like I just started people, to do.
Right. And so, you know, in our trimetric system, you know that part of that measures their view of themselves.
Yes.
And when things aren't going well in a job, it all comes floating off of that page.
Yes.
There's no escaping it.
Yep.
It's there. And then when you say, gee, your enjoyment of job was your lowest score out of 67 factors. Tell me about that.
And then there's dead silence.
And it all comes out. It just yeah. comes out because, and do you want to put them back in a situation where they're going to have the potential to fail? It's not just protecting the employer. It's protecting the applicant who has had enough already. They've had enough jobs that didn't fit.
Right.
Let's help them find one that does fit.
Yeah, and have it be a win-win for everybody.
And have it be a win-win. Do what you're passionate about. Don't, and the money will come. So if you're, how many people have said to you, well, I got to make a living?
Yes.
No kidding.
Right.
It's true for all of us. But I can either be happy at it and fulfilled and feel like I'm actually making a difference, or I cannot feel that way.
Yeah.
Because I'm in a job that I shouldn't be in.
Yeah, that happens for so many people. So
at least 50% of the population is in the wrong job, at least.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that at all. And I'm really passionate about what you guys do in your company and what you bring because of that opportunity for people, for companies to be aligned with the right people, but people to also be aligned for themselves. So that's really great. So, you know, we're kind of tossing around this conversation around behavioral style and all of that. And your company has a series of talent assessments that can be used to help hire the right kind of staff, and not just hire, but also develop, you know, for growth and mentoring opportunities. So why use talent assessments, and what kind of value can these really add to the hiring and development process?
You know, I'm still astonished to this day, even with some of my own clients who I love like they're my family. And they say, well, those assessments are pretty expensive.
Oh.
And I say, yes, compared to what? Making a hiring mistake?
Right.
A hiring mistake is going to cost you at least 1 year's salary and benefits of the person that has failed in the job because you have a do-over.
Yep.
You're going to use up management time. You're going to run ads. You're going to spend interviewing time. You're going to disrupt your business.
Yep.
While you're recovering from that person that now has either gotten fired or left or whatever has happened with them.
And that's just hard costs.
And that's hard
not all
costs.
Of the ancillary
the emotional
crap that's
stuff. And everybody else in the office is ticked off at you because you hired that character in the first place. And we could go on and on. Right. So I think that, you know, if there's an objective way, a legal objective way to have an instrument or instruments that help you to understand who it is you're talking to, so that you can verify that that is the right person and you have a way to evaluate the position they're going into. So it's not a one-sided coin.
Right.
That you then have a job match. And so if you spend, you know, several hundred dollars to do that, is that better than losing a year's wages?
Isn't that crazy?
I mean, it's a no-brainer. I'm astonished when people bring the price of assessments even up in a discussion.
Yeah.
So it just shows you that they're not informed. They haven't been educated to understand the value.
And they're being short-sighted, right? They're thinking short-term instead of long-term. Like, I don't want to pay it now to avoid that longer-term expense.
I had a client come to me and say, you know, I think my people are really stressed. And it's, well, why do you think that? Well, it shows. And if we have a couple of people who have developed migraine headaches, and we've had people that have walked out in the middle of the day and just had enough and they've left, a lot of pressure in this particular business.
Pretty telling.
And I said, why don't we, you want to find out? Do you want to know how much stress they have? So we ran a stress quotient on all of their 70 employees.
Yeah. Wow. Was it
and
pretty
it
telling?
It was blood red.
Oh.
I mean, it was a very bad result. And they have had to work very hard to change because it's cultural.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
They blame it on the nature of the business. They blame it on the clients. But truly, it's cultural.
Yes.
How do I react as the leader? How does that transfer to my team? Am I really focused on outcomes and focused on having the right people in the right places at the right time? And am I giving them the resources, the processes that they need to work effectively? Am I doing that? And when you do that, the stress goes away and it's measurable. So what does the assessment do? It measures. It's a great before measurement and it's a great midway measurement and a great after measurement, right?
But you have to be willing to put fear aside, right? I think a lot of people would are afraid of what those results are going to look like and they'd rather just sweep it under the carpet.
Absolutely.
Than face it head on,
wouldn't
right?
You?
Well, yes and no, but yes, you know, no. I mean, yeah. What's the long-term damage to your company to let that keep going?
Absolutely.
You know,
we have to, if we want to, most of us are growing right now. Mm-hmm. Economy is good. Businesses are growing.
Right.
Hiring lots of people.
Yes.
Labor market is shrinking mm-hmm. dramatically. Really hard to find good people now.
Yep.
And all of that going on, how do we have sustainable growth? If we don't have the right players, it's not possible.
It's not. And then wouldn't you also agree that times are changing a little bit and the workforce is demanding more better work environments? They're not taking on, like I think my generation and, you know, the earlier generations before me, we kind of embraced workaholism, right? I think the younger generations are like, hell no, we're not going to embrace that.
You're not talking about those millennials, are you?
I am,
yeah.
You know, but they're not going to stand for that kind of stress. It doesn't seem they're not going to put up with it as much. So they're going to navigate towards those companies that are dealing with it head on, that are putting time and effort into their teams. Would you agree with that?
You bet. And I have evidence so that the national norms in one of the factors that we measure has gone up by 2 solid points. It's gone up from 2.3 to 4.3 in just a 7-year period.
Why does that mean?
It talks about life balance.
Okay.
Being in harmony with your environment, doing things for a reason, for a cause.
Yes.
And the millennial generation is all about cause.
All about cause.
I'll put my money where my mouth is. I will work for a cause. But if you micromanage me and just say, do it because I told you to, because I'm your boss, it just isn't going to fly.
Yeah.
Those days are gone forever. Or to work 6 and 7 and 8, you know, hours longer than the day is just not. And yet they will work if they know something's important has got to get done. And we'll go back to our Kathy example. I don't care if it's Sunday and she's getting ready to go to church. And if a client needs a link because they're going to interview somebody the next day, they've got it. Got it done.
Yep.
And I don't have to make a call or say anything or do anything as the leader. It's a part of how she feels and it's a part of our culture.
And it makes you more productive.
And
then.
It makes me more productive. Yeah. And it makes our clients happy, which of course is what we're here for.
Yes.
Is to help them be successful. Right?
So it kind of, it's like this holistic you know, it all comes around full circle, right? If everybody's in the right jobs and everybody supports everybody in the right way and everybody becomes more productive.
You bet.
Right? All right. So we've been talking a lot about hiring per se, but let's kind of shift a little bit and talk about training and development, because I know your company does a lot around training and development. And I feel like companies have disconnected, and maybe they're coming back to it now that companies are growing again, but feels like that's one of the first things to go, right? On the expense line, when companies aren't doing good, let's cross out training and development. Talk to us a little bit about training and development and how important that is to the health and happiness of the company as a whole.
The only edge you have as a company is your people.
Yeah.
It's about innovation. It's about responsiveness. It's about accuracy. And if you don't, and we'll go back to the millennials for a minute, they want continuous learning.
Yes.
They've grown up in a world of education. Mm-hmm. They've grown up in a world of technology and constant change, way different than folks in my generation, right? But I think that the essence of all of this really, really, really is that if you invest in your people, mm-hmm. and their learning, it's something that can never be taken away from them. Whether they stay with you, they leave you and go somewhere else, you're making the business community at large better because you're continually helping people. How many employees leave because of the person they're working for?
Probably a majority of them.
Huge numbers, huge percentages.
Yeah.
Because that's my company. Does that person advocate for me when I'm being, you know, blocked and I can't get things done? Are they there to help me? They understand that I have a life outside of work and that I've got a family and I've got to take care of them.
What?
How are they behaving? Well, who teaches them how to behave? How do they learn to be a better leader? And it isn't a short-term thing, Lisa. We have a new program starting that we used to do live all of the time, but companies are so busy today. You're doing so much with so little. As a result of the recession, companies are still shy to spend too many resources to grow too fast. They're shy about that.
Yep.
And so how do you do that? You have to give them a way to do that training and that development and growth that's manageable. And so we have come up with a 100% virtual program.
Nice.
So you only spend 2 hours a month in class, in session.
Okay.
That's very manageable for most people.
Yeah, and no drive time.
And no drive time.
Beautiful. Now,
it goes on for 11 months.
Well, but...
So I didn't say quick.
Right.
Or easy.
Yeah.
Think of it as a college year. That it's, you know, a semester. At least of learning, and that you're applying yourself and you're working with others and you're learning how to work as a team and how to collaborate better and how to innovate together better. So it isn't just learning management principles. It's a bigger thing that's more holistic, as you pointed out before. It's more holistic than that. And you really need to make sure that you're constantly doing that with people. So we're ending a program for this poster child client of ours down in Florida.
Nice.
We're just finishing a leadership program with them, and we've already got the next program lined up.
That's really great, because I think, too, these are skills that a lot of people think they should have. Like, you're either born with them or you're not, or I should have it. And if I'm too embarrassed to say that I don't. And we all need it. I don't care what kind of a leader you are. You know, Richard Branson, who is like the head of the Virgin companies, he's constantly doing professional development and growing himself even
Absolutely.
More. And these are the kinds of skills that are really important and that are going to take ourselves and our youth and the new generations to lead our country and lead our businesses and lead our economy. So for any of you out there listening, and if you have doubts about whether you should already know that, no, we're not born with that kind of stuff. So yeah, you've got to keep learning. And these are the types of opportunities that are really, really important.
And I could hear the passion in your voice. And that is exactly what we're talking about, because you're passionate about what you do.
Yes.
And when you are, the money will take care of itself over time.
Yeah.
So for the entrepreneurs out there, we don't get any paychecks. True.
Right.
But the payoff is is the satisfaction of doing a great job being recognized as that, and then using that to make your living. And so I've put six kids through college and married off five of them, out of this little business and that's lots great. Of other things along the way. So, I mean, you just have to say you're going to.
Yeah.
And if you love it, you're going to. And now I'm 5 years past retirement age and I'm still doing what I do because I love it.
Because you love it so
much. I'm not doing it, to make a living anymore.
Yeah.
You know,
that's great. How many people can say that, right?
Well, hopefully lots of people. And that's my goal. My goal is to be passionate about the work.
Yeah.
So I just asked a friend from church who sought advice for a job change he was making. And he's a very cautious guy, very meticulous and careful, a computer programmer type of fella.
Yep.
And I said, so changing jobs, what will you benefit by going over to this company? And he thought for the longest time, and he says, well, it's more money, and I get to a 4-day work week, which I like. And I says, and what else? And, it's the old question, and what else? And what else?
And what else?
Yep. And finally, he said, I don't feel challenged in the work I'm doing.
Mm.
It's so routine and so predictable, I could do it in my sleep.
Yeah.
He said, it's time. And this is a person that doesn't like change.
Oh, wow. Right?
He's change adverse. And that's why he was seeking input, because he was in the decision process. Well, he made the change, I'm happy to say. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah.
Right. But then I asked him the same set of questions about his new role. What will that new job mm-hmm. give you that the old job did not give you? And
great questions.
He went through again. We all need to ask ourselves that why question and then what.
Yes.
Right.
And dig deeper, right?
And I love
that. Yep. Right. So how detrimental do you think it is when somebody's in the wrong role?
Are you talking about a team or a person in a job?
Either, actually. Okay. Let's talk about both.
Well, if I'm in a job that is so wrong for me, behaviorally speaking, so wrong for me, then doing it is drudgery.
Yep.
And adapting to it, if you're going to be good at it at all, mm-hmm. So maybe you have the skills and experience and the education parts of it, but you just don't like the work.
Yeah.
You just don't care for
it. Gross. I don't like that.
Right?
Yeah.
And so you go to work every day wishing you weren't there. Mm. And everybody around you can feel it.
Yes.
So one of the impacts is that it telegraphs, right? 38% of our communication is nonverbal.
It's true. Yes.
And so we, in our body motions, it affects us in terms of our health, because we're adapting our style to be somebody we're not. So if I'm a very non-compliant human being, guilty, and I have to be a very compliant human being all of the time, it's not going to work.
And it's exhausting.
And it's exhausting. And I use up energy and I create stress.
Yes.
And when I create stress, stress has all kinds of manifestations mm-hmm. as we go along.
Yeah.
Some of them are physical. Some of them are mental.
None of them are good.
Not only are you not happy at work, or your coworkers are not happy with you, when you get home, it continues.
Yeah.
Because I'm exhausted from it. I've used up all the energy in my being to try to be somebody that I'm not.
And that's a great point. You're so exhausted that then when you get home, you have nothing left to give. And I think we see that in our society.
Absolutely.
Right? And so who gets the brunt of our exhaustion and our fatigue and all of that is the people that are closest to us, right?
Absolutely. So, it's somebody you know today, right?
Yep.
Isn't that the,
right.
Kick the dog.
Oh, poor dog.
Poor dog.
All right. So let me ask you this. For businesses that are listening that don't have a dedicated proposal team, so I want to relate this back specifically to proposals. For the businesses that don't have a dedicated proposal team, what happens is that they generally kind of pull just, hey, you've got a few extra hours over here. And, hey, Karen, you've got a little bit of experience over here. And they just pull this team together. When we're asking people to wear multiple hats within a role, what are some of the pitfalls that we need to look out for?
I don't think it's the multiple task thing. I think when people are really engaged, they're excited about what they're doing.
Okay, good point.
If we have set it up right, if we've set the team up correctly mm-hmm. and said, here's the team. I know my people. I've assessed them. I know who they are.
Yeah.
I know how they're going to work together. I know what their skills, experience, and their education. So I've taken the time to organize my RFP team correctly.
Yeah.
And I've brought these people together. It's also an opportunity. Think about it. It's an opportunity to increase collaboration and teamwork in your organization because you have the special project. And you've been selected, Lisa, to be on this team.
Ooh,
and
I
here's
love that.
Why you've been selected.
Yep.
It's
instead of like, you're just being thrown because we need a body. That's a great approach to that.
And we want everybody wants to please their boss truthfully.
Right.
Everybody wants that. They can say they don't. They can say they don't want recognition. None of that is true.
Right.
You know, we're human beings. We have feelings.
Yep.
And so we want to be a part of something that's good.
Mm-hmm.
When it's a mess.
Right. Maybe not.
We don't want to be, don't put that on my resume, right? I worked on that team.
Yeah.
And so that's a big part of building that team culture.
Mm.
And then having them select their leader, having them participate in deciding who is going to break the tie when there's a tie to be broken.
Yeah.
Now in a smaller organization, that may just be the owner.
Right.
It just may be.
Yeah.
But there's lots of opportunities to allow them here against another learning opportunity. Now they can learn mm-hmm. some leadership skills because they have to lead a team. But you can't throw them into that and expect them to lead a team if they've never done that.
Yeah, and I love your point too about, you know, this happens long before an RFP hits somebody's desk, right? This is an ongoing culture of your company that you are taking the time to get to know your employees, to understand their behavioral styles. You know who's on your team, what their strengths are, what their weaknesses are, where you should and shouldn't place them. I think that's super powerful because I don't know that a lot of companies, like what percentage would you say of companies out there do that proactively?
I think it's very small.
Yeah.
Because, and why would they if they don't know that that's what they should be doing?
True.
We don't know 100% of what we don't know.
Right.
I'm so wise, aren't I?
You are wise. You know, I've heard that. We don't know what we don't know, but I love the 100% factor in there. That makes it all the more powerful.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, this has been fantastic, Jerry. I want to go back to a couple of things. One was you talked about this program, that this virtual training program. Is that open to anybody? Can anybody
yes.
join that? How would they learn more about it?
They're going to come to www.hpisolutions.com.
Okay.
And on our homepage, they're going to see this wonderful leadership, virtual leadership development program.
Great.
And all they have to do is click on it to get more information or to register.
Okay.
And if they register early, they're going to save $100. If they register by April 13th, we expect the class to start on the 1st of May.
Wonderful. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So for all of you out there, I mean, honestly, leadership development, you can never have enough leadership development. This is something that will, whether you're in a leadership role or not, whether you want to be out front or not, really having those skills and being able to have this conversation like we're talking about here is hugely important to your career and to your business or to your company. So,
you know, yep. we say that we facilitate from the back of the room because it isn't about our facilitator, and she's phenomenal. If you like Kathy Huska, you really
I would love
like,
her. Okay.
You'll love Laura Dillingham. But the idea is to get the group, because they're from different companies, together mm-hmm. and talk to each other. And the richness of that, the sharing of knowledge and background and information, is so powerful.
Yeah.
And would it surprise you that everybody goes through a TriMetrics assessment?
Would not surprise
and learning at the front end of the process so that they can understand each other and understand themselves better as they go through this leadership experience.
And is it true as well that, you know, when they're going through this and they're meeting all these other people, you get this sense of belonging and validation that, like, I'm not alone out in the world. Like, as I know, a lot of times when I was younger, certainly, and in leadership positions or in a wanting to be in leadership positions, that you feel like you're the only one that has challenges with certain things, or you're the only one that feels incompetent sometimes. And when you're in a room full of people that are all going through the same thing, you realize you're not out there alone. And it's powerful to have that kind of a community. And it sounds like this training also really helps build that community for the people that attend.
It does. And it also draws their leadership in.
Yes.
From each of those organizations, because you have to be sponsored in. and you need to, you're going to be doing projects that are economically beneficial to your own company.
Yeah.
And so you need involvement. So we pull in these other folks that are going to benefit too from what's going on. But it is the power of that. It's the power of connecting. And it's the power of people making sure that they understand that whether you're a drilling company, whether you're an insurance company, whether you're a hospital, the problems are very common.
Yes.
I've worked in over 500 industries. I mean, it's so common that I laugh when people say, well, you know, you don't understand. It's, right. it's different here in XYZ.
And I say, like, no, it's
really?
Not.
Is it now?
Okay. Well, that's great. Well, just a reminder on that website, hpisolutions.com. Is that also where they can learn more about you and your company if they want to know beyond that class?
Absolutely. I have my high school graduation picture up there.
So I love it.
Take a look.
Just a couple of years old, that picture of his. Any parting words of wisdom based on what we've talked about today?
Well, I'm going to part with a compliment for you because you invited me to come here. I love to talk about this stuff.
Yes.
Right? I'm passionate about what I do. You're passionate about what you do. It's very easy. And you've made it very comfortable to have this conversation because of your passion. And for you folks out there, you know, you're not in the RFP writing business. You're in the getting the RFP through and approved. And if you want to do that, go see Lisa.
Oh, thanks, Jerry. That was a very nice little plug. I didn't even ask him to do that.
Can I have my dollar now?
You can. All in change. That's all I've got for you. Okay. Well, thank you, Jerry. I so appreciate you being here. Some great insight. Again, go check him out. These assessments, you guys, are powerful. I'm a huge proponent as well. And it's not just about the assessment, but what Jerry and his team do around that assessment and how they bring that to life and really help your teams be the best they can be. So thank you for being here. I appreciate you. And for all of you out there, on behalf of Winning Business Radio, where we connect businesses to the strategies and resources to help you win more RFPs, I am Lisa Rehurick, the number one leading authority on RFP success, and we will see you next time.